inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
If you're not familiar with Section 8, it's a government program for low-income tenants where the government pays the tenants' rent every month. It can be a really lucrative program for investors because you don't have to worry about money. Every month, on the first of the month, that rent money is going to be deposited into your account. But there are some downsides. There's a lot of rules. There's a lot of regulations. There's a lot of things you need to be aware of. And it may not be a good fit for everybody. We've talked about Section 8 on the podcast before. We've had landlords that love Section 8. We've had landlords that hate Section 8. And on the show today, we're going to come at it at a little bit of a different angle. We're going to look at it pretty objectively. My guest on the show does Section 8 rentals, but he also has some regular cash-paying tenants too. So on the show today, he's going to give us his experience. He's going to be very objective, give us all the information, and then you can decide if Section 8 is something that might be a good fit for you. Joining us on the show today from Johnstown, Pennsylvania, is Rich Hudek. You probably remember Rich. He's been with us before. So let's take a really quick break. We'll thank our sponsors. We'll come right back and we'll talk to Rich. It can be a real challenge to stay organized and keep track of all your rental income and expenses for tax time. Most people end up with a pile of receipts that you need to sort through and make sense of. I want to let you know about an easier way. It's a software that I use called Rental Hero. It was built specifically for rental property owners. They have a really easy-to-use web portal as well as an app where you can easily input all your income and expenses. You can take pictures of receipts, and you're done with the paper receipts for good. They have a free 30-day trial. You can try it out. No credit card required. If you don't like it, there's nothing to cancel. Just go to rentaltrial.com. That's rentaltrial, T-R-I-A-L. The first step in buying a rental property is to get pre-qualified, and I would suggest you work with a lender that specializes in working with investors because the last thing you want to have happen is to get to closing and find out the money's not there and you can't close. The lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender, and she'll pre-qualify you for free if you mention Rental Income Podcast. Find out more today. Contact Chaley at ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com. NMLS 42056. Before we get into today's conversation, I just think we should let everybody know that you don't work for Section 8. You're not trying to talk anybody into doing Section 8 or not doing Section 8. You're just here to basically share your experience, right?
Yes, that's right, Dan. I'm a landlord with some practical knowledge that I'd like to share with others, and hopefully we can do that.
Awesome. And you also run a landlord association, and your association has some involvement with a program similar to Section 8. Can you tell me just a little bit about that?
Sure. We manage a HUD, Permanent Supportive Housing Program, for our county, as well as a state-funded rental assistance program also. We've been doing that for about 5 years.
So that's similar to Section 8, but it's a little bit different. And we'll get into exactly how that works as we get into the show. So just to give everybody some background on yourself, can you tell us how long you've been involved with Section 8 and what your experience has been like?
Well, we've been buying rental properties and managing them ourselves for about 30 years. And we started with Section 8 pretty much from day one. We really didn't know anything about the program, but one day an applicant asked if we take Section 8 or the Housing Choice Vouchers program, and we said, sure, we'll give it a try. And we kept Section 8 units for many, many years. Over the past, I'd say about 10 years, we've cut back on the number of Section 8 units, and we currently just have one. But we've had positive experiences with that program throughout our lives.
Now, I think that what you said there is something that is important to highlight, that Section 8 isn't something that you need to get approved for ahead of time. It follows the tenant more than it follows the property, right?
Yes, it's tenant-based, so the tenant receives a certificate that they can use to rent any property pretty much anywhere, but typically it's in the county in which they've applied for the program.
Okay, so if somebody wants to get involved with Section 8, the way to get involved is to find a tenant that's already been approved.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
And the tenant often will seek you out, but you should contact your local housing authority if you're interested in participating and making sure that you are on any type of list that they give out to those who are looking for housing.
All right, well, let's talk about some of the pros and cons, because would you agree that there's definitely good and bad when it comes to Section 8?
Sure, I would agree.
Okay. All right, so some of the pros, I think the big one that comes to mind is the guaranteed rent, that you're getting rent every single month on the first of the month, guaranteed no matter what.
Yes, it's backed by the government. The payments will always come to you. The amount that they pay can vary based on the tenant's income. So you should be aware that if you get a tenant that suddenly has a big jump in income, they'll be asked to pay more each month. So the rental subsidy will go down. But for the duration of the program, you're definitely going to get the rent each month, no question.
The other pro is I got to think that you have a certain leverage over the tenant, because once they get on this program, it's taken them years to get on the program. They don't want to lose it. So do you have a certain leverage over the tenant that if they're not doing something that you want them to be doing with the property, that you can kind of hold that over them?
I would agree with that. In most cases, you can tell a tenant what you want them to do, but if they ignore you, they're free to move on to another place. With Section 8, if you tell them that they're violating the lease and you inform the housing authority of that, they are at risk of losing their certificate, which means they can't transfer to another property. So you do have more leverage than with a typical tenant.
Okay. And then the third thing that comes to mind is that you have a case manager at the housing authority that's working with them. So you have a kind of a third party to go to if the tenant isn't living up to their expectations. Do I have that? Am I thinking about that right?
With the Section 8 program, your client, your tenant does have a case manager, but there's no guarantee that they will be making any kind of regular visits to the property.
Okay.
It's pretty much going to be limited to a conversation between the tenant and the case manager when it comes time to do an income assessment each year or to provide other paperwork. So you're not going to get the same level of support as you would with some of the other housing programs.
Okay. So, I mean, right now, I mean, just with those three things, with the guaranteed rent, with the kind of leverage you have over the tenant, and with a case manager, it seems like a pretty good deal. So, like, overall, like, are you happy with Section 8, with your Section 8 properties?
Yeah, through the years we've had some issues, but they've been relatively minor. They've mostly related to inspection issues, where the inspection standards change from year to year, and we have to do some extra work. Or if there's a complaint registered by someone, whether it be another tenant or a neighbor, it could result in an additional inspection, even though there may not be a problem with the property. And that's just a level of oversight you don't have without rental subsidy programs.
Right, right.
As a landlord, you have to decide how responsive are you, what kind of level of maintenance do you want to provide. And of course, I'm not suggesting that you should operate a property that lacks fire safety and basic habitability standards. You definitely should maintain all your properties consistent with that. But a few examples would be changing the outlets from three-prong outlets to two-prong outlets, and then changing them back to three-prong outlets. Or tiles on a floor that maybe through the years a few get cracked and you change them with a color that's slightly different and being asked to change them all to the same color. That type of work becomes a bit tedious at times. But that's really a function of your particular housing authority and the program they run. So your experience may vary.
Right. Now, I've only had one Section 8 tenant, and I found that the inspectors were really kind of nitpicky. You know, there was probably 20 things that they wanted fixed on the property, and probably 18 of them were things that would have been fine with any other tenant. Do you find that the inspections are kind of costly or time consuming?
We've certainly had many time consuming inspections, no doubt. When we had more units years ago, I can remember going and having to spend several days doing a lot of the small items that were required. A particular issue would be cracks in plaster, hairline crack they would like to see patched, which can really be a tedious job.
Yeah.
Whereas the vast majority of tenants wouldn't care if that problem exists at all.
Right. Okay.
So there have been long-term inspections. It's taken us a long time. Now, as the years go by and the properties become more consistent with what their standards are, we've had a few inspections that's 5 or 10 minutes and we're done. Change a battery in a smoke detector or a cover plate. So that's something that will decrease, I think, over time, unless you're introducing a lot of new units into the program.
Right. Yeah, you know, that's something I was just thinking about. So do you think it makes sense if someone's going to do Section 8 to have a property that's freshly rehabbed, because you're not going to have these little things coming up? Then on the other hand, if you had a property with a lot of deferred maintenance, it might end up being pretty costly.
You know, I've thought about that, and there's really two ways of looking at it. If you have a property that needs a lot of work because of the deferred maintenance and you're committed to doing it, Section 8 can be a way to force you to get that work done.
Right.
Yeah. If you don't have the Section 8, maybe you don't get the work done. Maybe the property continues to look a little shabby, and as a result, you don't attract a better quality tenant. So I can see how Section 8 could force a landlord into doing more than they would have done, and that could be a good thing.
Right.
But there's no doubt that if you have a property that's well-maintained, freshly remodeled, your upfront time and effort's going to be a lot less, and your ongoing maintenance is going to be less as well with a rental subsidy.
Right. Okay. All right. So for the cons, so inspections and then the extra cost of repairs. Another con that I saw was the time, that it took time from the time that we found a Section 8 tenant. It took time to kind of work through the system of Section 8 to get the inspection scheduled and then re-inspection scheduled. Like, so is time like a major factor with Section 8, or did I just have bad luck?
No, I think it's definitely a concern. I'm working with a Section 8 tenant now, and I would say the delay is going to end up being probably more than a month from mm-hmm. the time the tenant first wished to rent the property till the time that I actually get a rent check. Now, not all of that time is not the housing authority's responsibility. There's time that I need to get paperwork together, time that I need to get repairs made. But there are delays. There's
right.
an initial inspection. There's the follow-up inspection. There's the paperwork that has to be sent back and forth. And the rent subsidy probably will begin when the home passes the inspection, even though you may not receive it for a few weeks, but there still is going to be a delay there.
Right.
And that regular tenant without a subsidy, you can collect that money from day one.
Yeah. So I guess that's like a calculation everybody would have to kind of do on their own, where if you're missing out on a month's rent, you got to figure out, is that guaranteed rent worth losing that time? Because like, you can never get that time back for the property if it's sitting there empty for a month. So
sure. I want to be sure that before you sign a lease with your tenant, that the subsidy is definitely in place. Because
right.
if you sign that lease and for some reason the subsidy doesn't work out, either you don't want to make the repairs or the tenant doesn't do something they're supposed to do, then you're going to be left with a tenant who probably can't afford the rent.
Right.
And you could have an unfortunate eviction situation or lose a lot of rent that way. Housing authority, you want to ask them, that will they do the inspection before a lease is signed to let you know what work has to be done before you sign that lease?
That's a really good point.
That's important.
That's a really good point. So how does that process work? So when you get the tenant, would you call over to the local housing authority and ask them the question? Because I wouldn't take the word of the tenant. Like, you want to hear it from the housing authority, right? So can you call and get
yep.
that from them?
Yes.
Okay.
Call the inspection department and ask them if they're willing to do an initial inspection prior to having any of the paperwork done, the lease signed. And if they do that, you'll know, especially if you have a property that has a lot of deferred maintenance or it's your first time doing it, you'll know
yep.
whether you're going to be able to do the work and how long it's going to take you.
Right.
And they're going to give you a limit as to how long. Oftentimes, the tenant will have a fixed number of days, maybe 30 days, to find a property. So you want to be sure that you're not going to take something on that's going to take so long that the tenant is in jeopardy of losing their certificate.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point, because like, you had a property once where they wanted the whole property painted, right?
Yes, yes. That was one where the tenant had been in the property for a while, and every year we had to do a little bit of spot painting, but then one year they said, we want the whole house painted. And I think we ended up resolving that by starting to side the property. But whether it's painting or siding, that can be a huge disruption to our plans. And in the future, I would not use any property for Section 80 if there was any evidence of peeling paint at all. The mitigation could be much more cumbersome than just doing it yourself. You may have to require an EPA certified painter to come in, especially if you have kids under six in the home. So that's really something to be aware of. If you have a lot of peeling paint, it may be just to best to avoid the rental subsidy programs.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good point. Yeah. So that's, I think, a really good piece of advice. Talk to the housing authority, get them to come over, take a look at the house. And if it's going to cost you several thousand dollars to fix up the property to meet their standards, it may not be worth it to do Section 8. All right, so let's talk about a couple of different myths that I've heard through the years, and you can tell me if this is true or not, but a lot of people seem to think that Section 8 tenants are rougher on properties than regular cash-paying tenants. In your experience, is that true?
No, that's not been our experience. The tenants who are approved for a rental subsidy program have some screening that's occurred. Now, that screening doesn't necessarily match what you do as a landlord. And I would suggest every landlord do a full and thorough screening on everyone they accept who has a rental subsidy. But there has been some screening done. And if that person has an active criminal history or really bad rental history, it's less likely they're going to be approved for the program, which is going to be a little bit of a protection for you. Plus, every year with that inspection, if the tenant has caused damage to the property, they have to make those repairs. Mm-hmm. So if they're rough on your property in year one, they're not likely to be able to stay there and continue to receive a subsidy if they damage your property. So I think it would work just the opposite. There's a perception that rental subsidy tenants are tougher on properties, but I really don't think that's the case.
Yeah. Now, the other thing that a lot of people think that I think is a misconception, but you know, I definitely want to hear your thoughts on this, that Section 8 is only in low-income neighborhoods. Is that true, or can Section 8 properties be really anywhere?
Section 8 properties can be anywhere. I believe any kind of rental subsidy program is going to encourage their clients to find housing in any neighborhood, not to be segregated to one particular part of town. It's very important they have a choice of living anywhere they like. However, as the rents increase in areas that are more desirable, the subsidy may not work because the family may not be approved for a rental subsidy which matches what the market rent is.
Yep.
So oftentimes you'll see a concentration of rental subsidy program units in areas that aren't as desirable.
Right.
Also, the landlords may have a tougher time renting properties in tougher areas. As a result, they're more likely to use the rental subsidy program with its additional requirements.
Okay, that makes sense. So if you live in, if you've got a rental in a neighborhood where properties are renting for $1,000 a month, but Section 8 is only paying $800, that's probably not going to make sense
right,
to get involved. Absolutely. Right.
But the housing is by a fair market rent standard. So they'll have a limit that they can pay. And if the rent you're asking is beyond that, it first of all has to be reasonable, but if it is reasonable, the tenant will have to pay the balance,
right?
And they may not be able to afford that.
Now, what about raising rent every year? Is that something that you can, at the end of the lease term, can you go back to the housing authority and get more? Because you know your insurance went up or the taxes went up, your costs may have gone up. Can you get a rent increase?
We've always been told that we can do a small rent increase each year, I think a couple of percent. But also a few years ago when the garbage contract for our city changed and the owner had to pay for the garbage, we were allowed to add that entire amount onto the rent. So for special adjustments, that can be greater than that couple percent. Also, if your rent for some reason is well under market or under the subsidy amount, you could probably ask for a higher increase at one time. I'm not really sure because our experience has been limited on that, but I am sure in the case of the garbage, and the small couple percent increase each year, you can do that.
And then as far as the eviction process, so if something went bad, if you just have a nightmare tenant, they're destroying the property, the housing authority hasn't been able to get them to comply with the lease, you have the full right to evict a tenant if you needed to, right?
Yes. The lease is not with the housing authority. The lease is between you and the tenant. And if you need to evict, the process would be the same as with any other tenant. But you do have to be very careful about that, because if you do evict, it's possible that subsidy could stop prior to you getting possession of the property back. So you want to ask the housing authority, how long will you continue to pay rent if this tenant is under eviction?
Okay.
If the tenant is not complying with the housing authority's guidelines, they may stop the subsidy for a different reason. And if they do that, then you're going to want to start your eviction process right away if you don't think the tenant can continue to pay rent.
Yeah.
But if they're violating your rules, you have to watch that if you're going to start evicting, that you don't accidentally terminate that rental subsidy while they're still in the property for an extended period.
Now, talk to me about some of the other housing programs, because we've spent a lot of time talking about Section 8, but I know that you mentioned earlier that you administer some other programs. Talk to me about some of the other programs that are similar to Section 8, but they're maybe not run by the government.
Sure. Throughout the country, there are several different types of programs. There would be permanent supportive housing programs, which would be most similar to the Section 8 program. There's a program we offer called Bridge Housing, which is up to 1 year for individuals that can attain sustainability after that year. And then there are transitional housing programs. In virtually all of these cases, we are dealing with individuals who are homeless or near homeless, meaning they're sleeping on the streets or in a shelter, or they're under the threat of eviction. So unlike the Housing Choice Voucher program, where homelessness is not necessarily a factor, we're dealing with individuals that are in the most dire need of housing. And the subsidies can range anywhere from indefinite, in the case of permanent supportive housing, to 1 month, in the case of programs administered maybe by United Way or another nonprofit in your community. These programs have the rental subsidy paid for by the government in virtually every case, but they're usually administered either by a housing authority or by a nonprofit or a local unit of government.
Okay.
And I think any landlord who's interested in rental subsidies as an option should definitely check with local shelters, local mental health departments, and local landlord associations to find out if there's a way they can get on a list so that their names and numbers are given to anyone who needs housing.
All right. And the last thing I want to try to squeeze in here before we wrap things up is that in addition to these programs, there's also charities out there that can help tenants if they get behind on the rent. Can you tell me how these charities work? Because I think that this is a great way for landlords to maybe help a tenant out if they're really heading towards foreclosure. Eviction.
Or eviction, right? It can even be foreclosure as well, because anyone going through a housing crisis can go to one of those local charities. And we found the process to be very informal. There are a number of church-run charities in our area that offer limited rental assistance. It doesn't involve usually the inspection or nearly as much paperwork, but it will be very limited in amount and duration because they just don't have the funding to carry on for an extended period. But whenever you have a tenant who gets behind, you want to have a good list of what those charities are so that you know where to send them. And you often should take an active role in that process to see whether or not they're going to be able to qualify for some help. You don't want to put that in the tenant's hands entirely.
Right.
Because if they get behind and aren't able to navigate the system to get the help they need, then you're going to end up losing more rent while you wait for that help to come. But those programs exist everywhere, I'm sure. It's just a function of what the economy is like and the individual charities, what they're able to do.
And probably a good idea to get the charity to pay you directly instead of giving the money to the tenant, because they probably have other creditors or bills that they need to pay too. So if you help them out, see if you can get paid.
I'm not aware of any program that pays any subsidy to the tenant.
Okay, good. Okay.
In every case, it always goes directly to the landlord, which is really important.
That's good. Yeah. Awesome. Well, Rich, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast. Tell us a little bit about your landlord association. I know you're very active in the Johnstown area. Tell us what you guys do, and if anyone is interested in investing in Johnstown, I think you're a great resource. Tell us just a little bit about your association.
Sure, thanks. The Greater Johnstown Landlord Association has been in existence since 2006. We're a group that meets regularly. We consist of landlords and property managers in the Greater Johnstown area, but you can own properties here in your out-of-state. We can be a great asset for you to help you navigate the problems in the landscape here. And we welcome people coming into the area that want to buy properties and manage them effectively. It's a good market, a good rental market here in our area. Prices are cheap. The management is pretty intensive. So if you're a new investor, be very aware that you're going to need management here locally to be able to help you. But if you're in our area, please give us a call, stop by, or be happy to talk with you on the phone anytime.
If you want to reach out to Rich, I've got his contact information on the website. You can look it up at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode251. I'd like to give a huge thank you to our sponsor today. It's Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. If you're looking to buy a rental property, whether you want to add to your portfolio or you're looking to buy your very first property, I highly recommend you reach out to Chaley. She's a nationwide lender and she specializes in helping investors buy rental properties. Most loan officers are working with people that are buying a primary residence, and getting a loan on a primary residence is very different than getting a loan on a rental property. There's lots of different ways you can qualify. There's lots of different ways to set things up, and Chaley would be more than happy to walk you through the whole process and make sure that you're in the right loan for you and your situation. If you want to find out more or set up a time to talk to Chaley, you can find her at ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com. If you mention Rental Income Podcast, she will waive all the pre-qualification fees. NMLS 42056. Thank you so much for listening today. If this is your first time here, make sure you subscribe. We've got new interviews every single Tuesday. If you subscribe, you'll get notified as soon as they come out. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.